This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the BristolCon Fringe reading series.
Okay, thankfully everybody's got their beer and whatever. I thought we'd just have a quick Q&A with our two authors. So if Tim and Peter can join us nearer the front so they're okay to answer questions and stuff. I thought I would ask Peter, first of all, what it's like actually writing in two different languages. I don't know if any of you know, but I've been doing this podcast series called Small Blue Planet, where I'm interviewing people from different countries around the world. And we've done like Finland, and we've done China, and we've done the Philippines, and Israel. And I forget what the other one is now, which is embarrassing. But one of the most interesting things was talking to people about how there are things that you can say in one language that you can't necessarily say in another language, and so on. So when you're translating between the two, you can't always get the same effects in your writing. And I'm wondering whether there are any interesting things about Polish that maybe you can't do in English.
It's probably the same with any language. There are differences with the rhythms and with the meanings of certain words. I don't know, really. I mean, I've translated one story which was for some time on the full frontal lobe, which wasn't actually an original, not original story, it was mine, but I've translated it from Polish, and keeping the kind of double meanings where I wanted them in English was a damn hard work, really. But writing in English is, it's sometimes easier for science fiction. Probably because, some things in English sound less, I hope nobody will interview me, but less ridiculous in English than they sound in Polish when you write about them in science fiction and in fantasy as well. So, I don't know what that answers.
That's probably because English is a deeply daft language. For the strange words that we've stolen from other people, and, much as like we stole things and stuck them in the British Museum or whatever. I'm wondering what is the science fiction and fantasy like in Poland? Well, obviously we're all very familiar with Andrzej Sapkowski these days because he's getting published in translation, but is there a thriving market out there?
There is. I mean, for years past, there was mainly Stanisław Lem, which some of you might know, mainly by the movie Solaris, which doesn't actually resemble the book much. But then again, in the last 10 years, it has grown quite considerably, with people actually beginning to earn their living by writing books, not just being emerging like Andrzej Sapkowski and just writing books on the side for the first seven books, really. but mainly, I would say the difference with Polish science fiction was always that up until probably a decade ago, it was very deeply set in the kind of social subjects. So it would have, for some time in the communist times, it was probably the only way you could get away with criticism in one form or another, because it was you could hide it in the science fiction. But that's pretty much.
But it's there. It's getting bigger.
Yeah, Tim, I was interested in hearing you talk about how your objective is to write science fiction that's set now. Would you like to explain a little bit more about what you're trying to do there?
Obviously the stuff I write about is really largely based around like sort of contemporary issues, and I don't really set a kind of like firm timeline for when my stuff's set. It's obviously really near future, but in some ways I like to think of it as like an alternate present in a way. Maybe if technology had gone slightly different direction, we'd have the technology that were in my stories. But I kind of said this stupid idea to myself like a couple of years ago after I was watching the riots, the 2011 riots. And it seemed like an incredibly science fictional event to me, really, in that, it was a sort of reminder of like Ballard novels and things like that. And I remember watching it going, well, you know, what can science fiction do to help us understand what's just happened, and that's why I wrote Limited Edition. And I set this kind of stupid task for myself where I try and write science fiction about what was in the news. Now, the problem with that is that publishing times for science fiction are famously long. You can take 6 months to sell a story, and then when someone buys it, it's not going to be published for another like year or something. But I've been quite lucky to be able to put stuff up on Medium, which is this new site which gets quite a lot of traffic, which is why I did a 0 hours. So that was really good, because they were like, I was watching Newsnight on like Tuesday, and they were talking about 0 hour contracts, and then Wednesday I was writing a story about it, and like Thursday it was online, and Saturday 10,000 people had read it, and it was like, wow, okay, that's, you know, this is, it does work, you can do this. How much often I'm going to be able to do it, I don't know, but it's something I'd like to have another stab at doing, yeah.
Of course, that sounds like something out of a Tim Moore story. you've been doing quite a bit of work recently with people like Nesta, and there's a lot of business these days in what's essentially futurology. I suspect Dr. Tony might have a question about this later, but how are you finding working with these people who want to know what the world is going to be like in 50 years' time?
It's really interesting. The first thing I found and realised, which made me really happy, is that they don't want to know what the world's going to be like in 50 years' time. They're just interested in trends and stuff. And that's as much about the present as it is about the future. So really, it's quite similar to what I've been doing. I sometimes get frustrated, as you probably know, because I find a lot of the time I'm talking about things in science fiction, and science fiction as a kind of amorphous mass isn't interested in what I'm talking about. Because they're Doctor Who and fucking dragons and shit, and I want to talk about, you know, important things, and
like a new pair of sneakers.
Like a new pair of sneakers, yeah, man. And as a result, I mean, I've been to a few events, like where I've been, you know, guests out. I was down at Brighton for Improving Reality a couple weeks ago, and I was in Amsterdam in January for Sonic Axe. And you know, you meet these people, you meet these academics. And these artists and architects and people, I've done some work with the Architects Association in London as well, and suddenly it's like, wow, these people are interested in the same things. And I'm kind of there as the token science fiction writer, in a way. You sit in the corner and they look at you and expect you to say something clever, and you know. But it's kind of nice to know that with that sort of futurist, or they like to call it foresight now, with that kind of foresight thing, it's nice to know that people are interested in the same issues I am. But I really think science fiction still needs to seize that. I think it's what science fiction does best, and I'm proud to call myself a science fiction writer, don't get me wrong, and I always will, I think. But it's something that science fiction really needs to own and not let it slip away to these sort of amorphous, semi-corporate kind of organisations.
I talk a lot of shit sometimes, sorry.
Hey, no, that's okay. You can talk as much shit as you want. We can put an explicit tag on it when it goes on. The other thing I wanted to ask you, I was chatting with Jonathan after you'd read, and we're both very impressed with the rhythm of the words and the way that you're able to read them with that rhythm. And I was wondering whether the fact that you've worked as a DJ, particularly with forms of music that do involve quite a lot of spoken word, whether that's influenced your writing in some way.
A lot of people say to me, like, about the short sentence thing, and they go, that's a William Gibson influence, which it is, because, you know, I'm sort of unashamedly a massive William Gibson fanboy, and Chandler and noir stuff, but it's as much from hip-hop, really. Less me being a DJ, me just being a sort of teenage hip-hop fan, and, you know, 20 plus years ago, and wow, yeah, 25 years ago, Jesus, and I'm 40 in a couple of months, and that kind of, like, I really grew up on Public Enemy and Eric B. and Rakim and a lot of political stuff, so it kind of really like forged my kind of view on a lot of things, but especially on the use of language, yeah.
Did you notice, by the way, that the intro music for the podcast of this is hip-hop?
I didn't, no, I haven't heard them yet. Good, I approve.
I did that for you.
Thank you.
All right, does anybody have any questions for our two readers tonight? Yes.
Hi, Sorry, Tim, for both of you or to us. You've kind of touched on it, but I would just wonder, I mean, you've touched on it, Tim, in talking about how you see science fiction as a kind of social commentary, and you're not so interested in Dungeons & Dragons stuff. I just want to ask both of you, what is the point? Why write science fiction as opposed to other kinds of literature?
Yeah, the question there, in case the microphone didn't pick it up, is why write science fiction rather than other forms of literature?
Well, mainly because science fiction is fun. In a way, it's easy to write about serious things, about philosophical things, plainly, about which are written about philosophical things, which are things about bigger or smaller questions, bigger or little issues. But they're dull. I mean, honestly, how many of us read philosophy as a, you know, bedtime reading or when you're sitting in the toilet? Science fiction is fun, and as well, it can be answering those questions. It can kind of hopefully teach you one thing or another, or just kind of point to things while being fun at the same time. You know, I mean, spaceships are quite, you know, exciting still, hopefully.
What Peter said, really. I think also, as it gives me a lot of freedom. If I wanted to write a short story about the 2011 riots, you know, actually about the 2011 riots and the motivation of the kids involved in it, I wouldn't have felt right doing it, A, as a white middle class guy, and B, as I would have wanted, you know, to go and do like a year's worth of ethnographic research, talking to the kids, trying to work out what their motivations were. But by doing it as science fiction, I can cheat and get away from those things. And I can make the point that I see. It's not, with my stuff, I'm never trying to tell the truth. I'm just trying to tell a perspective, and I try to ask more questions than I answer. But I would have felt like if I'd done that with just contemporary fiction, you know, without the science fiction edge to it, I would have felt like I was betraying the people that I was talking about because I don't know them. And what they want. And the thing with like the 0 hours thing, the thing with science fiction is you can dial the clock forward really easily. So you can take a current situation and go, right, what's that like in 10 or 20 or 50 or 100 years time? And then you can make an exaggerated point about the social commentary you're trying to make, which, you know, it's not like a warning, it's a sort of cheesy word, but like a kind of, you know, look, hey, if we carry on doing this, it might end up like this. And it's obviously an exaggeration, because all science fiction about social commentary is, but I think that's, it can be really helpful. You know?
John?
Those of us who read your stories quite excited about the idea you're going to come back from Amsterdam with a finished novel.
So might.
safely assume it's not going to be a space opera. Apart from confirming that, if you wish, what else can you tell us about it?
It's a question about Tim's forthcoming novel.
I'm about a third of the way through. I should have finished it about a year ago, but I've had a hectic year. It's about, oh man, I'll give you a big exclusive on this. It's set in Bristol.
Whoa.
It's the last thing set in Bristol, so enjoy it. It's set after the internet has been turned off. So after whatever reasons, cyber warfare, oppressive governments, the internet has been turned off, basically globally. Well, as far as the characters know, it might have just been turned off in Bristol, but
it's a horror story.
But it's really me trying to talk about a lot of things that have interested me in the last few years, like Anonymous, the Arab Spring, and you know, there was that horrible comment from Louise Mensch during the 2011 riots, where she said we should shut down BlackBerry Messenger and Twitter in certain areas of London, and from that one retarded comment from her, like a novel came forward where what if that had happened in Egypt, if they'd shut down Twitter, or in Greece and stuff. So yeah, it's about social unrest and the aftermath of that. Yeah. I haven't written it yet though.
Any more questions?
It's Peter, are you getting anything published soon, or are you working on a novel?
It's a question for Peter about his forthcoming work.
I've got that story in the airship shape of Bristol fashion. I've got the story that you've heard, which I still need to do a little bit of work on. I have started writing something, which I've actually started to write when you've asked me about the full frontal lobe submission, which I've never managed to finish in time, which turned out that I actually have more story for it than I thought in the beginning. So, I don't know. Hopefully that will be something more than just a short story on 8 pages. We'll see.
Excellent. Anybody else? Okay, well, I should just wrap up.
I've got those feet there.
Yeah. Tim is desperate to get to his burger, so you can go, Tim, and eat. I have one or two wrap-up announcements to make. First of all, of course, Tim's books are available. He needs to be able to afford that burger. So we have copies of Paintwork. We also have copies of Adventure Rocket Ship. Paintwork has 3 of Tim's stories in. Adventure Rocket Ship has 1, and they're both well worth buying. We do not have a reading in October, and that's because we are ferociously busy in October. To start with, there's the Bristol Festival of Literature, which is happening over 2 weeks. There are lots of wonderful, wonderful writers, and there's this amazing thing about Krakens and writing and things that are happening, and I'm sure that Pete Sutton will be happy to tell you all about that if you haven't heard about it already. Gareth, I know, is involved. Tim and Jonathan, you're all involved in it. So that's going to be really exciting. And then, of course, at the end of the month, we have BristolCon, which we hope you are all coming to. And if you're not, then Claire will be happy to take your memberships. There's still only 20 quid, and they're 25 quid on the door, so save money and buy now. And then we will be back in November for another one of these wonderful events. Claire, tell us who we've got coming.
We've got Ian Milstead and Jonathan L. Howard. And that's on the 18th of November.
18th of November, Ian Milstead and Jonathan L. Howard. So we'll see you in November. And then just remains for me to thank Claire for organising this. Thanks Shakespeare Tavern for hosting us. And thank you, Peter and Tim.
BristolCon Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the BristolCon Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.